fire, Lord judgment. My own sweet time, did it teach what I found? Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, as always, Shane Told. And if this sounds a little different than usual, it's because I'm recording this from my car. I am currently driving across the border from Windsor, Ontario, Canada, to Detroit, Michigan, United States of America, to talk to Landon Tours of The Plot in You. And this has been a guy heavily requested by fans of the show. So I'm looking forward to this. And that's why I'm venturing across international borders to do this conversation. I guess it'll be in his apartment. So that'll be pretty cool. I don't think I've ever recorded one of these before I've actually done the interview. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I only live a few minutes from the border, so hopefully I can wrap this intro before I get there. But as always, if you want to get in touch with me, it's very easy. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my email. Make sure you add me to social media. I'm on Instagram @ShaneTold. I'm on Twitter @ShaneTold. The show is on Twitter and Instagram @leadsingersyndrome, @leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. So yes, please get in touch. Don't forget about Facebook. I know it's like the army of the dead on there, but you see, they get you because you got to use Facebook to log into all these apps. So I know you got a Facebook account. Don't sleep on it. Check out our page. It is run by two terrific people, Neil and Julia, and they do a fantastic job. And shout out to them for helping me out with Facebook. They also are two members of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. If you tuned in last week, oh, it was a great episode. Finally, a live episode, live at Sinnerfest 2.0 in Norfolk, Virginia, with Steve from Punchline, my new best friend. I love this guy. If you missed it, go back and check it out. Again, a big thank you to everybody that came out to Sinnerfest to hang out. What a good time. And if you are interested in the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, that's what helps this show keep going, keep growing, doing its thing. For as little as $6 a month, you can sign up. You get bonus episodes, bonus content, merch, and to be a part of a great community. So head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess for all the details about that. In other news with me, Silverstein, we're heading over to the UK for Slam Dunk. What a lineup. What a festival. I'm very excited to be back in the UK. Not just for the 99p Greg sandwiches, although they are delicious. No, to play some music again. It's been a little while. I'm excited for that. If you're in the UK, I'm sure you're going. But check out Slam Dunk. And it's only like just over a month until we're going back on tour for a huge summer run with some of our best friends in the world, August Burns Red. Silent Planet is also on the tour. Their singer, Garrett Russell, has been on this show twice. It's just going to be an awesome hang. Tickets are on sale for that right now. I think a couple shows have already sold out, so don't sleep on tickets for that. It's going to be a really, really good time. Okay, well, I'm almost at the border. I'm going to wrap this up, but in a few short minutes, I'll be speaking with Landon Tours of The Plot in You. We're here, dude.
Hello.
We're doing this thing.
Finally.
This is so funny because I'm here with Landon Tours of The Plot and You. And the puppy is just so quiet until we start
now,
recording.
Yeah, now she's chill.
I love that.
She freaks out.
I'm here with Landon in his downtown Detroit apartment.
Yeah.
This is nice.
Thanks. It's all right. It gets us by. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, this apartment in New York City would be like $5,000
a
month.
Easily. Yeah.
So, yeah. You get a little more bang for your buck here.
Yeah, it's cool. It's literally like we take limes all the time, little scooters. It takes like 2 minutes to get into the city. So it's cool. Yeah. There's always stuff going on.
Where did all the limes and birds go in the wintertime? That's what I want to know.
I have no idea. There was a bird in our backyard for like 6 months straight. It was just like, it was dirt.
Like during the winter.
Yeah. It was just starting to get corroded, and I think it was a forgotten bird.
The whole scooter thing, I'm sure a lot of people listen
to this.
Is that
a thing in where you live, too?
No.
No, not yet.
Apparently, it's on the website that we have them in Windsor, right across the river, but I've never seen one.
I wonder if anyone's ever crossed the border with one.
I wouldn't be surprised. but a lot of cities have them, and I think they're great, but a couple things jump out to me about them. First of all, you've obviously been on one lots of times.
Yeah.
They go pretty fast.
Very fast.
You could really fuck yourself up.
15 miles an hour, some of them.
Like sometimes you're on it and you're like, man, if I hit like a pebble
you could fuck yourself up.
And once in a while, you'll get one that's a little sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, not once in a while. Like, I'd say 60% of them here are fucked up.
Right.
People don't even pay for them. They just ride them around, like do tricks on them and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm surprised they're allowed to do that. The companies?
Same. Yeah.
I don't even know if they are allowed to
There's
do
still
it.
Quite a few cities that like it hasn't gotten passed for good reason. I'm actually surprised it got passed here because I see people abuse them all the time.
Yeah.
Literally more often than not.
No, and it's so cheap. You wonder how they make any money.
Yeah, I rode one for like probably a half an hour the other day at like downtown. It was like $3.
Yeah.
It's like this makes no sense.
I know. I love them though. They're pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's funny though, so we decided to do this. I've wanted to talk to you for a long time, by the way.
Yeah. Do you remember touring together, by the way?
Of course I do.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you did or not.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you for a long time, and a lot of requests for you from fans of the show. Tons and tons.
Smart people.
And what's cool is that a lot of people don't know this, but I live literally like not even 10 minutes from downtown Detroit where you live. And I think if I looked out the window, I could pretty much see my house from here across the river.
That's crazy.
So it's really nice this worked out.
Yeah, for real. It is. But I remember we toured together, it was like 9-10 years ago at this point.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is, so we were arranging this over Instagram DM, very professional, and you gave me your number, so I texted you, and it was already in my phone as
really?
Landon BTE.
Oh my God.
Before their eyes, Still,
I can't
so you still have the same number.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so yeah. I was like, just blew my mind.
Yeah, I think we opened that tour, so I didn't think, yeah.
That was with, was that the one where it was us?
Bless the Fall.
Static Lullaby at first?
Yeah, well, no.
Or am I mixing that up? No, it was, it was Bless the Fall, right?
Bless the Fall was direct support, I think. I think that was like right around the time Boat had just joined.
Right, that's
I think,
right. That's right. No, I loved you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I really did, you know? And
you might have been one of our only fans then.
Yeah, you know, because it's like funny, and I really want to get to all this stuff, but let's just start here. I mean, when you left the band, I thought, you know, Before Their Eyes was really on the like on their way up,
really?
And I was sort of surprised. Yeah, it seemed like okay, this is going to be the new hot Rise Records band, but I guess
that's interesting
from the inside looking out, maybe not so much.
No, yeah, towards the end, our singer quit. And then I kind of took the reins for like a second. And then I was like, this just isn't my groove at all. Like,
right.
I don't know. It didn't feel natural. He quit right before a Japanese tour, which is insane. So
yeah, why would you like at least go to Japan
and
then quit?
I was so baffled. So I ended up doing vocals for that, that whole week of Japan shows. And I was so bad that they kicked us down from headlining to opening. It was us and like two other bands.
But because you were bad?
Because I was like, we were so bad and unprepared.
Oh man.
I was horrible. Yeah. I mean, before that, I just screamed, you know what I mean? Did some backup vocal stuff. But
right.
I was so not prepared. I think we practiced one time. We ended up tuning down everything like a full step or something so I could at least attempt to sing it.
Yeah, well, of course, when you're singing someone else's stuff, that doesn't get talked about a lot on the show, you know, it's not always easy. No, and it's not that you're a bad singer or that you, you know, you just, you're not, it's not in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't write those songs for my, you know.
Right, right.
My range.
No, it was Silverstein, Norma Jean, Bust the Fall, Before
Norma
Their
Jean,
Eyes.
That's right. I forgot they were on that, too.
And did I not say Norma Jean? Did I say someone else?
You said Norma Jean.
I said Norma Jean. Right? Yeah, yeah. Oh, and then Norma Jean dropped off the tour.
That's right. Why did they drop off? I don't remember.
Well, that's a whole thing that I'm not, maybe I won't get into. I'll save that for another podcast. Actually, you know what? I can talk about it. Corey, we had Corey on the show from Norma Jean a couple of years ago, and me and him are cool, but at the time, we weren't very cool when they dropped off.
Oh, so it was an actual thing.
Well, what happened, and I don't know, I'm just going to speak about it, is they went over their set time.
Okay.
And it was like a show that had a hard curfew.
Yeah.
I think it was in Denver, actually.
Okay.
And they went over, and like a lot, like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they were starting another song. And our tour manager, who didn't get along with their tour manager, she had been like a real headstrong about things.
Yeah.
So I think he was already kind of mad. He we pulled the plug on him.
Oh, damn.
Like pulled the plug, which doesn't, I mean, well, that doesn't happen.
It's a power move.
It doesn't happen. Like, when have you ever seen that happen to
never,
a band on tour?
Yeah, never.
Almost never happens.
Yeah.
So we literally pulled the plug on them. And it wasn't up to me. Mm-hmm. It was our tour manager's call, but I understand why. Mm-hmm. Like, it was early in a tour, and we weren't going to be able to play our set because of the time.
They were direct support originally?
They were direct support.
Okay. And then Bust the Ball and then us. Okay,
yeah. So that's the other thing, too, is like the show might have already been running late. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But they weren't happy about it.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Yeah. Well.
But then a few days later, they told us they were dropping off the tour, and Corey pulled me aside and he's like, yeah, you know, we're just having some issues, and our drummer's wife's pregnant, so he's got to go home to be with his pregnant wife. She's having some issues. I'm oh man, oh okay, yeah. go dude, you know, take care of your thing. So it was fine, and then they left, and then I found out that really wasn't what was going on.
That sucks.
Yes, she was pregnant. That wasn't like fabricated story, but
that's crazy.
Yeah, but so then they left the tour.
Is he still in the band?
Corey?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's the singer. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought for some reason they got a new guy.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
They've had a lot of people.
And he's probably the only original at this point, right?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, wait, but he's not even original, right?
Maybe, I guess not. Well, they used to be called a different name and everything else, right?
Yeah.
Right, with Ludacris and Josh Scoggin and that's all right. That,
yeah,
right?
Josh, so, that's the dude. Yeah,
my history of Tooth and Nail Christian hardcore is a little foggy at this point, but
it's crazy to think that was that long ago that scene was like, you know, the whole Christian Tooth and Nail, like all the big bands that everyone loved were like the Christian bands in the scene.
Yeah, it was a real thing.
And now there's like one Christian band, I think.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's just not
Fit for a King, I think, is the only one still kicking from that era.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, man. So, Back to Before Their Eyes, and you just said you were so bad at singing that you got literally billed lower.
Yeah.
Yet you decided to leave the band and then start singing yourself.
Yeah,
in your own band.
Doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make any sense. No, you'd think it'd be like
it crushed my confidence too for a minute. Like,
yeah,
I felt like shit for sure. Do you remember that band Watch Out, There's Ghosts?
Yeah,
that was the band that took over us. That was like the singer of a Skylet Drive's like side project or something.
Right.
And they were pretty bad. So, love those guys. So nice. But they even know it wasn't a great band. But anyways, yeah. So after that, I think I had like a good 9 months to a year kind of off, kind of just chilling.
Mm-hmm.
And then just started plot from there. Well, it was called Vessels before that. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's your background? So we're here in Detroit. You're not a Michigander. You're from Ohio.
Oh, boy.
Talk to me about that. How you know, what was it like growing up for you? What was your, you know, family structure like? And how did you kind of have music in your early days?
Well, I grew up homeschooled, actually. But I lived in like an apartment complex area that had tons of kids my age and stuff like that. So socially, I was like, you know, it was good. I had a lot of friends and stuff growing up. I didn't really feel like I missed out much on school, you know, any of that, the social aspect of school.
So when you say homeschooled, like your whole life, like you've never walked into.
I was given the option once I turned, I think it was like 10 or 11 or something, they gave me the option, but I loved waking up early, doing my school as fast as possible, and then skateboarding after that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they, as long as I got my shit done, they didn't care, like, you know.
Right.
So. So it was a pretty unique upbringing, but I didn't give a shit about music until I was like 15 or 16. And then I saw a video for Reinventing Your Exit by Under Oath.
Oh, right. And there's Fuse. There's an Under Oath poster right behind you.
Yeah, it was just crazy. I saw that and I was like, damn, this is sick. And then from there, I just started like, that was like literally the first band I'd ever heard that like caught my interest. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And then from there on, just started local bands and got in the local scene. That's how I met Nick from Before Their Eyes. My old band was playing shows with them and stuff, and then became friends with him and then ended up joining and got very lucky. Like right out of high school, I started touring. So,
yeah. I know. You're still, I mean, I guess you are still a pretty young guy for what you've
29,
done.
29.
Yeah. Not even 30 yet. And you've had how many albums released? So with the whole you know, homeschool thing, mm-hmm. what was the reason that, you know, your parents decided?
They were very Christian.
Okay. That's typically what happens with homeschool schooling, right?
Yeah. But again, like, I kind of found my way out of that pretty early. Like, I stopped going to church pretty early, and, you know, they kind of knew that wasn't my thing. When they were kind of shocked by it at first, but then I kind of came around. Once I joined the Before Their Eyes, kind of got back into it just for the sake of... They were a Christian band. I was like, I can be a Christian.
Right.
I know my way around this. So yeah, they were stoked when I actually got in a Christian band. I think they thought that was like my turning point.
You're coming back, yeah. Yeah.
Little did I know.
Absolutely.
But no, yeah, like the homeschool thing, a lot of people think like, oh, that's great. You know, like that must have been hard, you know, like making friends and like getting, I don't know, adjusted socially. It wasn't a thing. Like I had so many kids around where I lived that, yeah, we all hung out once I got off school.
Sure. I'm sure part of it is just what people, you know, tell you, right? You're like, yeah. Oh my God, you're weird. You're homeschooled. You're a weirdo. Yeah, or like, how do you even meet people? And then if you start getting that in your head, maybe you're like, oh yeah, I am at like some kind of disadvantage. When really it's like, actually, no, motherfucker, I'm off at 1:30.
Yeah.
I'm skateboarding down to the mall.
I loved
you know?
It. Yeah.
Right.
I had friends like begging me, you know, as a young teenager, like, come on, come to school. You'd have so much fun. I'm like, fuck that. I don't want to be there all day. Like, I have other shit I want to do.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have three, yeah.
So they're all you were all homeschooled
all
too.
Homeschooled.
Are they older, younger?
One older, two younger. Yeah.
Okay.
And they all had the option too, like.
Yeah.
At a certain age, yeah.
So you're still tight with your family?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah. I don't see them too often, a couple times a year, but they're all like still down in Ohio and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, and yeah, my mom lives in Florida. I actually just saw her a couple weeks ago.
On tour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still so weird for me, like her coming out to shows and watching, because I didn't allow either of my parents to come see me up until like 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't just allow just because of
I don't know.
Your own nerves, maybe?
Yeah, my own nerves. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, they're both, like I said, both very Christian, you know, but my mom likes it. She's stoked about it now.
What about all the F words?
Oh, I mean, we just try not to talk about like what I'm actually saying. But that's still to this day, my dad's never seen me perform because he's just such a pure soul. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want him to come hear me sing songs about, you know, doing drugs and having sex and stuff like that. I don't think he needs to hear that. I'd be pretty bummed.
Oh, that's.
But he is
funny.
Supportive still, though. Yeah, from afar.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I feel like that's kind of the right approach. I don't know. You know, like, I'll tell you though. Like, I can play a show, like a European festival to like 80,000 people, and like, sure, I'll get like a little bit of nerves. Mm. I can play a show to like 100 people, but my mom is there, and it's like
I'd be the same. I wouldn't even have fun. That's the.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing. I'd be so nervous about what they're thinking that I wouldn't even have a good time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, and that happens, not just even my parents, just sometimes anybody that I
same.
Like, that I like know. It's just, it's
I can't
so,
even track
so different.
I can't even do vocals in my own house. I have to make my wife leave for like, you know, go take the credit card, go like have fun for a couple hours.
Well, that's what she's doing right now. I saw her on the way out. Yeah.
I can't sing in front of her. Just, I don't
right.
know. It's weird.
But that's another thing too. I mean, we're in your apartment, which is... I mean, it's a nice, spacious place. Don't get me wrong, but it's not the newest. I'm sure the walls are pretty paper thin.
Oh, yeah.
Do you track vocals in here?
Sometimes, yeah. I did. I have like a solo record I'm about to put out in the summer, and I tracked all of it in my bedroom over there. Yeah.
Do you feel though? See, because I always lived in apartments. Mm-hmm. You know, I lived in Toronto downtown for like 7 or 8 years, and I lived in condos, and I could never track in my place.
No, it's
because I would feel like, oh, the neighbor's going to be hearing
people.
Me singing the same like line over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, just what is this? So now I live in a house. Mm-hmm. And the houses are pretty far apart, and I just let it rip at like 3 a.m. and it's great.
I missed that. I had that for a while.
Yeah, but I'm surprised with your, you know, with your personality and your parents that you can make a record.
It's crazy what you're able to do with such a small space, you know what I mean? But I made it work. I have it padded out really well, like it's soundproofed and everything.
That's cool.
Well, but yeah.
That's cool. So is this another record about robots? Record? Or this is something
this
else?
It's like, I don't know if you've heard of the one before that. It was called Dynamite. It's like blues rock type stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The new stuff is more like, I guess, like poppy blues, you know? Some of it could be compared to like, I guess, like Post Malone, but like with a bluesier feel, you know? But yeah, that's been the kind of, it's got like a, kind of a Frank Ocean-y type vibe too. Like
right.
It's all very chill, mellow stuff. Kind of just like a reflection of what I'm listening to these days, you know, more just
totally, totally
experimental.
Well, with, you know, all the stuff you're doing, and there's a lot of stuff. I'm not really sure where you find the time, first of all.
Well, last year we were gone like, I think 8 or 9 months out of the year. It broke my brain. I came home just like depleted. I'd never, like, we've toured a lot in the past. I think the most we ever did was like 6 or 7 months. But last year I came home and I was like fucked up mentally, like just trying to readjust everything because my sleep schedule got all screwed up and like, I don't know, just everything. It was just overwhelming. You know what I mean? So when I got home, I just kind of had to rewire everything and try to get back in a good pattern.
Right.
I'm sure you've experienced.
Well, that's the thing is that for me is like normal.
Yeah.
Like we always tour that much and we always have.
Yeah.
So my brain's maybe just always
you're
a little broken.
Just wired for you.
And oh yeah, I'm a fucked up guy.
Yeah.
But like that's the thing is I come home and the last thing I want to think about is music.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm the same way.
I mean, I'll throw on some of my favorite records and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But in terms of trying to be creative or trying to like feel inspired, like not really. I just kind of want to drink beer and watch sports. And
right.
That's more like what I want to do. Just to be honest, when I've been on the road for like 9 months in a year or whatever. So whenever I see someone like you or like I had Johnny Frank on the podcast a couple weeks ago and he's, mm-hmm. He does a solo album, like he puts one out, like he puts two out a year.
That's insane.
It's insane. Yeah. But you know, but you're putting a lot of things and I don't have that kind of motivation.
Yeah.
But you do. So that's kind of why I ask, just out of curiosity, you know?
I mean, normally we at least have, you know, half the year off. So I can take like a month to myself to kind of chill at first. And then, you know, once I feel ready, kind of get back into it. But this year I literally had to like force myself while off tour, like, you know, I have to get this done, you know what I mean? So just force myself to kind of get in the mindset of, you know, feeling inspired and, you know, sometimes you have to just force yourself into that kind of stuff, but it never like feels, once you get in that groove, it never like feels forced. It's always like, oh, I missed this. You know, it's kind of nice to come back to. Cause I don't know about you, but like when I'm writing, I feel like that's when I feel the most alive, as corny as that sounds. You know what I mean? Like it gives my life purpose, you know what I mean? Like every day I'm like stoked to wake up and have that to do, you know what I mean? But it always just takes that initial just like motivating myself to just get into it, you know? Because at first, usually the first few things that come out are kind of shitty, but after, once you get past that, you're like, oh man,
yeah,
this is fun, I enjoy this.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's almost exactly verbatim what Johnny said two weeks ago.
Yeah.
That it's my favorite part of it. And yeah, he goes, you have to write a couple stinkers and then the good shit starts coming out.
But I feel worthless when I'm not writing. I just kind of float through life when I'm not. But so yeah, it's always good. I just always have to push myself to just get into it.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. And
do you write on the road?
Too. No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, me
neither. Almost not at all. I feel like it would just, I'd be doing myself a disservice. Like I can't focus on, I don't know, especially like the way that I write, I tend to like sit on my couch or in one place for like a very long period of time and really like pour over every note, every chord. Yeah. And I need the like, I almost need like a unlimited amount of time mm-hmm. to get my idea how I want it.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's like, okay, well, you got this time between like the meet and greet and sound check. So you got like an hour.
Yeah.
So I couldn't go, okay, I'm just going to sit for an hour. Cause what if like the best shit starts coming out like after I've been there working for 45 minutes and then true. I have to like leave it behind.
Yeah.
I just can't work like that. Especially when I'm already, I have a thing where I, in my brain too, where I'm constantly thinking about shit I have to do.
Mm.
And if I'm thinking about that, I don't think I'll be able to get
yeah.
the right creative space.
I commend anyone that writes on tour so much. I'll bring my gear almost every tour just in case like I get yeah. inspired, but it never happens. I'm just never in that right mindset.
The only thing that I'll have that's close to like writing is, oh, like there's a cool soundcheck riff that I like yeah. came up with. Let me record it in my phone real fast.
Right.
It's hardly writing, but
yeah.
that's about as close as it gets for me. Yeah. I guess it's something.
Yeah.
I mean, you do that, you tour for 9 months a year, and you know, at the end of the year, you get quite a few pretty good soundcheck riffs.
Yeah,
I guess.
True.
So it's something.
Yeah.
So let's go back again to the Before Their Eyes days. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work out. You're off for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe feeling a little worthless. I don't
oh,
want
yeah,
to put words
absolutely.
In your mouth, but
yeah, no.
not probably not feeling at the top. Yeah. After basically trying to lead a band and failing.
Yeah.
How did it all happen that you decided, hey, I'm going to start this? And when did you start feeling like, oh shit, I have something here?
Well, like, so I started Plot as like a, it was called something else before
Vessels,
that,
but, right?
Yeah, yes. Vessels. So I started that as a side project while still in Before Their Eyes. It was like the last year that I was in it, but it was just more of like a studio thing that I was doing on my own. I had a couple friends that would like play hometown.
You weren't taking it very seriously.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So whenever Before Their Eyes kind of crumbled, the singer of that band, the old singer that quit, he's like, hey, I'll sign you for that EP that you have written or whatever. So we did a video for that. It was horrible. Put the EP out. Didn't really do anything.
Videos.
Yeah.
Go on.
And then he said like Craig from Rise was interested in signing it. And he sent in a contract like 2 days after. None of us even read it. We just signed it immediately. We're just so stoked. And that ended up being kind of a nightmare. But so we ended up doing like 3 years on Rise. And but it was, for us, it was kind of like not even being on a label, you know, like the,
we were like bottom of the totem pole.
Exactly. Like, which I totally understand, but yeah, it was kind of it was rough. Like the first few years of that, I was like, what am I doing? Like, this is like, I was recording bands and stuff at home, and every tour we went on, we didn't make a dime for like 3 or 4 years. And every tour was just like the worst tour that you could possibly do. And
yeah.
somehow I don't know how, but we somehow fought our way through it.
It's true. And yeah, I thought you would be on Rise just because it would be like a carryover from Before Their Eyes.
It's easy.
You know yeah. what I mean? No, but I mean, like, I thought maybe you were still under contract.
Oh, no.
Kind yeah. of thing. And they're like, yeah. well,
I was never on
you
contract,
can quit the
actually.
Band, but we still have you.
Yeah, no.
You know,
I think I was the only member of the band that didn't sign.
Was never signed,
yeah,
right.
Which
right.
was sick. Yeah.
Right, which is great.
Yeah.
But now, but at the time, you're like, oh, I wish I was like a signed musician.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you
yeah.
want to have the label, but it's like, damn, dude, actually, no.
And I think that's why I was so like excited and just like, I don't right. care what the fuck this piece of paper says, I'll sign if, you know, I have to cut off my arm. Like,
right, and sometimes they do. I think you got out relatively unscathed.
Yeah.
Depending on like how bad it could have been.
Yeah, and not to talk shit, like they're, you know, they're good people and good label or whatever, but we were not like a priority at all.
No, yeah. no, I absolutely not. Yeah. And that label's gone through major changes now. Like
yeah.
Craig isn't even there anymore.
Yeah, right.
You know, so that's the label founder.
Are you guys
so,
your own Rise?
We've completed our deal.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so we signed for however many records and we've put them out and now we're going to see.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's cool. We just put out our first independent release, which was some re-records of some old stuff. Yeah, like actually went back in the studio and redid it
Like from the ground
up. From the ground up.
That's cool.
Yeah. No one really does that.
Yeah. I think it's cool.
And like, yeah. And it's funny. I was talking to this last week with Steve from Punchline, and it's like, he's like, how scary is it? And they've been a band for like 20 years or something. He's like, how scary is it that someone can hear about your band, go on Spotify, and judge you in 30 seconds over something you recorded 20 years ago?
That's true.
And then that's it. And then just write you off.
It's fucked up.
Right? So at least we're trying to fight the good fight against that.
Yeah. That's cool though.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Okay. So back to what you're saying too, and it's jumping around a lot, which I love.
Yeah.
I always saw your band's name on, like you said, all these kind of bad tours.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like, I'm like, was this guy doing something else? Is this just a side project? Is this, because I know you're recording bands. It seemed like you were almost like a producer and then you just like go have fun on with your own band.
That's basically
It didn't seem like it was super serious, but your fans were really taking it seriously.
Yeah.
And it seems like right out of the gate, you're making a big mark with your music, which is probably, to answer your question, the reason that, you know, that you're here doing so well now.
Yeah, it was a long road. And like I said, for the first like few years, it wasn't for a paycheck. It was more just like, let's go have fun for a month. Like, let's go hang out. And that's fine. That was fine. But then it started, as we started getting older, we're like, oh, we need to like take other things seriously. So we kind of stopped touring for a little bit, almost broke up, and then Fearless hit us up. And that was kind of like the rebirth of everything. We're like, oh, like, you know, we found a label that gives a shit and wants to like, you know.
So Fearless came to you?
Yeah.
Wow. So we That's did a, crazy. Because Fearless is like, I mean, they're kind of the top of the top of labels.
They're literally, and they're amazing. Like, I have absolutely nothing negative to say. That label has done like above and beyond for the band. It's mind blowing. Like, they saved our band's life for sure.
Yeah, no, they're incredible. Well, the last album you put out was a very different, I mean, it was just different.
Yeah.
Different approach. A different direction. Mm-hmm. When they came to you, they didn't know that, I guess.
Well, so after we did one record with Stay Sick.
Right.
And that was like, that was just the deal. They bought us out of our Rise contract and all that stuff. And so, yeah, we did that. We did Happiness and Self-Destruction with Stay Sick. And then after that, we did like a headliner, and then it was pretty much like nothing. You know, like we just kind of sat around. And I was totally accepted the idea like that. I'm fine with that being my last tour. You know what I mean? Like, I had a good time. And then out of nowhere, our manager was, this was like after us being off for a long time. He's like, hey, I think Fearless is interested in signing you guys. And at the time, I honestly didn't know much about Fearless. Like, so I started doing my research and I was like, I talked to some other friends that were on the label and stuff. They're like, it's as good as you can get. And I was like,
totally.
So we showed them the new demos and like kind of the direction that we were going, and they were super, super stoked on it. So it was like, damn, I guess I could have a few more years left of me, you know, like if they can really do what they say that they think that they can do for the band. I was like, I'll do one more. We'll see what happens, you know. But before that, I was totally, totally fine with never touring again.
It's crazy. When you did the Stay Sick record, were you dealing with Franz on that all the time? Or is he...
Not really. Our manager at the time also worked for Stay Sick. So we already had that connection. So we kind of just dealt with him. But Franz, like, he definitely, like, cares, you know? And
I
think he's very ambitious and stuff.
Oh, sure. He's...
I don't know how much, like, hands-on he was with
her. Well, he and I have become friends through the show, I guess, because I interviewed him and I...
He's a great guy.
He kind of is a great guy. Yeah, like, he's kind of, like, out of his mind, but in the best way.
Yeah.
And his work ethic and some of the ideas, like, that he has are... Really, like, he's a smart dude.
Yeah, he is, for sure.
There's no question.
I think that's a common misconception. You know, like, his persona, you know, it's a little bit different than what he actually is in real life.
Exactly, but you got roped into that.
Yeah.
And you did tours with Attila.
Yeah, we did one.
That
is insane. That was, like, when the About That Life record came out. I think every show sold out, but, like, one or two. It was nuts.
Was that, I mean, obviously, that's good for your career in that in terms of you're getting in front of a lot of fans, a lot of them kind of young, younger fans and stuff. But at the same time, being lumped in with Attila, has there been any issues with that? Like, people just saying, oh, they're like Attila Jr. or anything like that?
No,
just because, not that you are, but because of the association.
No, I think we got more shit on a For Today tour than we got on a... Yeah, that tour, like we had some,
For Today really taking it the other way.
Oh yeah, I think within the same year we toured with Attila and For Today, and it was like night and day. Like the For Today fans did not like us at all, and then Attila fans were like, you know, so welcoming.
Right.
Yeah, that was an interesting year.
That's wild. That's wild. Well, Fearless is wow. That's really great. And yeah. I don't know if you knew this, but I was poking around on your Spotify the other day. And in your top 10, 9 of them are from your new album.
Yeah.
And the 10th...
I actually just realized that recently,
And the 10th is a cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer.
Well, I mean, sure.
No one ever wants a cover to be one of those.
No, but it always is, man.
Always.
Those pop goes punk things are so damn popular.
It's true.
But that must make you feel good.
No, it's great. We've noticed on this last tour, especially... doing the meet and greet, like most people had only heard of us from the new record.
Yeah.
And so, like some cities we'd play some older songs and people are like, what the fuck is this? Like right. had no clue.
That's
like,
what I was going to ask you.
Which is kind of cool. And yeah.
But it's tough because you've been a band a long time. You have fans that have been with you from the beginning.
Yeah.
That, you know, they show up wearing like the first t-shirt you ever printed.
Yeah.
You know, they've got some rare like demo they want you to sign.
Yeah.
And they want to hear some deep cut.
Is
it impossible to play it at this point?
We played one song from that first record that we put out, and it felt so just like left field that like halfway through the tour, I was like, I don't know if this is worth it to even do for like the 10 kids that care. You know,
that's the thing. Yeah, but it's hard.
You kind of have to do that fan service if they're gonna wait. If those kids really liked that old record and they're waiting through the entire set to hear that one song. Kind of have to give it to them, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess at the point your band is now, and the way that, you know, anniversary tours start being a thing, maybe it could be something where it could be like, we're going to do a set, like two sets, and one could be something like something old for those fans.
Yeah.
But at the same time, maybe not.
Yeah.
Because the music has changed so much.
Exactly, and yeah, obviously, like what I said, you know, most of the kids that are at our shows now, like, have no idea what the old records are. We maybe have, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 kids a night that are like, play that old song, you know, that no one else knows.
Right.
So I don't think for us it would even be worth it.
Probably not.
A lot of kids are probably going to listen to this and be very pissed off hearing that.
Well, no.
The old fans.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. I mean, the sound has changed. And, I mean, why has it changed?
I don't know. I don't really... I feel like every, you know, metalcore vocalist says, you know, I don't really listen to this kind of stuff. You know, like it's become like such a stereotypical thing to say. But it is true. I don't really listen to much heavier stuff. And I don't know. It's not because I think I've outgrown it or anything like that. I don't think it's a...
I don't know. What was that?
My dog is...
Was that a... I don't know. Oh.
Small one.
Oh, hi.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people... talk about it as like they grew out of it, you know, like as if heavy music is immature or something like that. I don't think that at all. I don't know, my taste has just changed. And, you know, a lot of people will say, like, not a lot, but some people have said, you know, it sounded like they sold out on the new record or whatever. To me, it's you're only selling out if you're playing something you don't want to play. You know what I mean? If we were to do another metalcore record, forced metalcore record, that would have been us selling out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
'Cause none of it, that's just not where our hearts are. So. Yeah, what we're doing now, I think, is what we've wanted to do for a long time, but especially in these later years, you know?
Totally.
It just feels more organic.
You're doing co-writes.
Yeah.
And I guess this probably started back in the production days, making records for other bands, probably how it started. Does that in some way start to bleed into the plot in you?
Yeah, for sure.
Like where you're writing, like you're like, okay, this artist is probably not like a heavy artist or this is something different. And you're trying to write a song in some kind of different genre that's maybe not in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And then you're like, for a second, you're like, wait, maybe dude, this is me. Maybe this is like what I want to do.
I have a funny story about that, actually. The first song and the last song off of our new record.
Probably two of my favorites.
Thank you. I wrote those songs for another dude. But as we're in the writing, I wrote both those songs in one day. And as I was writing them, I'd get like halfway through and I was like, dude, I'm sorry. I have to keep this for myself. Like, I'm way too stoked. And he was legit pissed off at me. Like,
who
by
was
the end
it?
Of the day, his name was Shanzi. He's like this independent artist from Arizona. He was up with me for like 2 weeks writing and stuff.
Well, hopefully you wrote him some other cool
shit. I
did.
I wrote him some. I made sure, like, the third song I wrote, it was still sick. I was like, all right, you can have this.
So had you already, were you writing with him?
Yeah. Well, like, I was writing. He was kind of sitting and just, like, giving input and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But, dude, yeah, he was fucking bummed. Yeah, because I legit wrote both of those songs in the same day. And one after the other, I was just like, dude, I'm so sorry. You're going to hate me, but I have to keep this song for myself. I have so many ideas for these. And yeah, I think it kind of put a strain on our friendship for a minute. But
yeah,
I got two of my favorite songs out of it. So
it's interesting. Yeah, and they are the first and last, you know, songs kind of book album. Hey, yeah. Hey you.
Barrett, chill.
Book ending the record. Mm. But they do have a different sort of tone than the rest of the record. Is that...
For sure.
Is that an intentional thing to put them in that sort of sequence and stuff?
Yeah. Those are the only two songs that don't really have a structure. You know what I mean? They kind of just, as they go, it just gets, you know, weirder and weirder. But
which, when you're writing a song for someone else, that's generally a bad idea.
Exactly.
To go with that form.
Exactly.
So maybe it's better for that guy.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of how I sold it to him. I was like, dude, there's no chorus or anything. You don't want this song. Like...
Yeah, this song's terrible, which is why I'm keeping it.
In the back of my head, I'm like, cha-ching, cha-ching. No, but it's good. He ended up with some cool songs, so I think we're square.
Absolutely. While we're on the subject, a couple of the other songs on the record, one's called Rigged.
Yeah.
And I love the title.
Thanks.
Can we talk about the music business?
Yeah.
Is that what it's about?
Oh, yeah.
I love that whole concept of... You know, every musician is fighting this uphill battle.
Yeah.
Because of whatever happened, you know, I guess now we're talking about 60 years ago when they decided this is the way we're going to sell records.
Yeah.
And how that's just bled into it. And how now, finally, I feel like artists are able to be like, wait a second.
We can take this power back. We don't have to do this. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because they're just a bank when you think about it for the most part. Well, a lot of them, I will say. And that was my experience, you know. You know, before Fearless was always, it was a very impersonal, you know, they pretty much just, they'll throw you a couple grand to do this, a couple grand to do that, you know, tour for 2 years and then we'll repeat, you know what I mean?
Right. And then like, hopefully we get a hit and if we don't, then whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that song was kind of just me venting about my past experience, you know, just feeling used up and kind of like chewed up and spit out, you know what I mean? So that was, me just kind of venting all those loose thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have a better relationship with the dudes at Rise now than I did even while we were on the label. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think I just kind of realized like I wasn't really offering them that much, you know, because I kind of went against the grain of I think everything they kind of wanted us to do, and so yeah, I kind of deserved to be. Pushed down, I guess.
Well, I mean, and sure, hindsight's 20/20, but I'm sure in some ways they probably look at what you guys are doing now and what Fearless is doing.
Sorry.
And they probably have some regrets too, right? Maybe. I mean, they're probably like, oh my God, we didn't see this potential that this band, you know, had, or either we didn't make it happen and it's too bad, right? But
I think
they still have your back catalog, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, you know, that's not too bad for them.
They're fine. Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, the relationship now is good, you know?
Yeah.
I can talk to them and kind of, you know, because they still have to send me checks. So I have to talk to them every now and then.
Oh, well, if they send you checks, then geez, that's not bad. That doesn't happen for a lot of bands.
That's true.
Whether you deserve them or not.
Right.
Speaking of relationships, Feel Nothing, that's a song on the record. And I read that you wrote it about an ex-partner, but while you were still together.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. I don't want to get too deep
into
that. That's
pretty rough.
But yeah, basically like, before I went to go record that record, we were kind of like on our way out of the relationship. So she was definitely hearing like most of what I was writing, but I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't think it really registered. But it's...
Well, I think that's a funny thing, man. And I've been there too.
Yeah.
And I've definitely... Because here's the thing, right? Like, I feel like with women... You know, after like a couple months, like let's say, you know, the woman's like, I'm not really feeling it after 2 months, they break it off.
Yeah.
A guy, after like 2 months, I'm not really feeling it. I'm going to wait like 6 or 7 more years and then I'll break it off.
That's so
true. You know, like, and that's sort of what's happened to me. And I know other people, cause I've had this conversation, maybe not on the show, but,
God,
but in general,
so true.
where literally you're writing about a person and they're like in the other room.
Yeah.
And it like, all of a sudden you're like, well, this is like, this isn't really nice of me to do.
Right.
And then of course, inevitably the album either comes out or they hear a rough mix or something.
Like, what's this about?
Oh, and you lie.
Yeah.
You have to lie. Yeah. Oh, no, honey. It's just, they're just words, you know, yeah. Like I had to come up with something that like rhymed with fire. So I used desire, yeah. You know, like just, you know, you do whatever you say, what you have to do to like kind of cover your ass.
Yeah.
When really it's like,
oh, my wife now. That shit doesn't fly. If she even thinks for a second something might be about her and it's a little salty, no. That's not happening. Like, all right. Well, way to take all the fun out of everything. Why is my dog just puking everywhere?
Oh, I don't know. I don't see any puke. Where?
That's good now. Well, she did over there. She's just
crazy. I think I see a little one over there, but...
But yeah, it's kind of good now. It's challenging. Like, I have to kind of... think outside the box a little bit. I can't just talk shit, you know, through music, but
right.
Yeah.
How long have you been married?
About almost a year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah. She's great.
Is she from here? Is that what
she's
brought you
from
here?
Ohio too, actually. But,
so what brought you here to downtown Detroit? A little bit random.
Dude, it is very random because Detroit in my mind, like I hated it. I had a phone stolen downtown like a couple years ago and that was like the last thing in my mind. Like,
right.
I got my fucking phone stolen.
How did it get stolen? Like,
I was sitting in the van. We had one of our side doors open. It was like summertime. And this homeless guy comes in and just sits next to me and asks if he can buy my shoes. And I was like, no. And then he leaves. And 10 minutes later, I'm like, wait, where's my phone? My phone was next to me, just sitting on the thing. He had swiped it. So that was like the taste I had of Detroit in my mouth for years. I was like, that's the place where I got my phone stolen. I was broke. It took me like couple weeks to get another one. I was so depressed.
Oh,
like,
my God.
So basically, we lived all over, like around Detroit.
So you moved here to find that guy.
To find that guy. Get my phone back.
This is your vigilante mission to find this guy years later.
Yeah.
So you roam the streets of Detroit at night looking for one
homeless
guy. Still
looking for that iPhone. I think it was a 5G or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, so we had lived in and around, well, not in, but around Detroit for a couple years. And then my wife just randomly found an apartment that was super close to downtown. She was like, let's at least go look at it. And she was like, yeah, I love it. So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to be gone. So you, wherever you want to go, that's where we'll go.
Yeah.
So she still, yeah, she works at an orphanage actually downtown, like around downtown. And, yeah, I think we're just going to stay in Detroit now. I think we both have grown to love it.
Well, yeah. And I started coming to Detroit. It's really funny because today is Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way.
Too.
And it's really, so I started dating this girl that lived in Michigan. Uh-huh. This would have been like 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So like a long time ago, 12 years ago. And I remember because I was living in Toronto at the time. She was living downriver, Groseal actually.
Okay.
So I came to visit her. Mm-hmm. And this is like the third time like we ever hung out. And it was Cinco de Mayo. And mm-hmm. I got off the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it, which leads you right in Mexican Town, and it was like I've never felt more out of place in my life.
Yeah,
made like a turn, didn't really know where I was going. All I'm seeing is literally like a child hitting a piñata,
yeah.
Like Mexican, like mariachi bands, like street tacos, like all this stuff, and I'm just like, ah, and the streets are closed. And I didn't know where to go, so that's just a weird throwback I had to that. But back then. You know, whatever it is, 12 years ago, you didn't want to live down here.
Detroit
man.
Was a
it was
totally different
really,
place.
Really, really scary. And it's gotten really cool.
Yeah. Especially like the downtown area. Like I never worry about anything. Like it's so chill. There's always shit going on too. Like music festivals and stuff like that. Like it's popping.
Yeah.
There's stuff
happening. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny because after a few years later, she moved from, you know, Groseal downriver downtown. And she lived like the building over there. Mm-hmm. The light colored building,
yeah,
the taller one. She used to live in there.
Oh, crazy.
So when I was rolling up, I was
small
like,
world.
Oh shit. Yeah. I know this area.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, but it is really, really crazy. And now, especially with, you know, what they've done with like Little Caesars Arena mm-hmm. and that whole area now is like great. And yeah. I feel like that's just, it, the radius is now getting bigger and bigger where there's so many great restaurants and
yeah.
and places to hang.
It's sick. I love it a lot. I never in a million years thought I'd end up in Detroit, but yeah, you know, it's cool how it worked out.
Nope.
Yeah.
And you're going to watch in the rent you're paying right now.
Oh, it's going to be double.
Oh like, yeah. It's, yeah. It's not going to last forever.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact, don't come to Detroit. It's, yeah. it sucks. Don't, nobody come here.
Even the year that we've lived here, we've seen so much growth. It's insane. Yeah. I've never seen a city grow that fast. It's pretty awesome. Man. Yeah.
No, it's, I love it. And I really like living just across the river. I pop over here all the time. Yeah. Just, I pop over here just to get gas.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Smart.
Why not? So I got a few fan questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm not just checking my Facebook. I have some questions on here I posted.
For sure.
Like I said before, a lot of people were really, really excited about this one.
That's cool.
So the first question comes from Samuel Lepercio. Mm-hmm. Lepercio. I never knew how to say his last name. He's asking if you're going to keep going with the AI 640. That concept is amazing and so heavy.
Thank you, Samuel. Yeah, I'm going to do one more, and then that'll be it. That'll be kind of like it'll be a trilogy, I guess.
Right.
But, yeah, that's something I just started. I started it, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. It was just, I wanted to write, like, riff-built guitar stuff, you know? Yeah. Just, like, the craziest, unplayable shit, because it was just fun to do. And then, yeah.
What do you mean by unplayable?
Well, at least I can't play. it's pretty, most, I would say at least, like, 15% of it is actually pretty unplayable.
So, like, you have to record it, like, note for note?
Yeah, note for note. It's all just craziness the entire time. Yeah. But, yeah.
A lot of people don't understand that, which is why I'm explaining.
I don't think most people even know what riff building is, but, yeah. Basically, you just, play everything note for note, and you can make a collage of sounds that are almost unhuman, you know?
Yeah. It's wild, and I know a lot of that stemmed from when people discover that guitar pro program.
Yeah,
so you can like, you can, it's just basically like, you know, if people know what a guitar tab book looks like, you can kind of enter in the numbers yourself, but you can put numbers in that like your hand could never physically do.
Exactly.
And then a lot of people were like, wait a second, this is kind of crazy. We can like play chords that you can't play or whatever.
Right.
So that's interesting that you use that concept.
Yeah. One more little EP and I think that'll be it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I got one here from Gunnar Morales.
Mm-hmm.
He asks, do you miss the Wife Beater days, which is the name of a record, by the way. Let's not get... And what was your favorite show you ever played?
I do not miss the Wife Beater days at all. that record,
why was the record called that?
It was like about domestic violence and stuff like that. Just like stories of, you know, childhood things and stuff like that. But yeah. No, I don't miss that at all. I think we did like 2 tours and I think they're 2 of the worst tours we've ever done. And it was a bummer. We did those 2 tours in a vehicle that broke down like every few shows. And,
so the favorite shows weren't then?
Not then at all. I'd have to say any of my favorite shows that I could think of were probably this past year.
Awesome.
Yeah. There was a lot on this past headliner.
Does anyone stick out in your mind? One moment?
We did a show in LA with Under Oath, and it was like I could be overshooting a bit, but I think it was like 10,000-11,000 people, and that was just like, fuck, like it was pretty nuts. I think that's when it hit me, like I'm on tour with the band that legitimately got me into music in general, and like this is insane, you know, it's like mind blowing. That was like one of my first like this is cool moments, you know. I haven't had too many of those, so yeah, that was like, that was a cool one for me, for sure.
I love it. I love it. Okay, we got one from Adam Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
With the sound change on Dispose, was it more of a natural progression in the band's sound, or were they conscious of making a less heavy album? Follow-up, does he think that they hit their ceiling on creativity with heavy music on Happiness in Self-Destruction?
That's a good question.
Well-worded.
Very well-worded question. So I wrote about 20 songs for Dispose, and I'm not kidding, like half of them were heavy songs, and basically when we got to the studio, we're
like, just, they could be on the last record kind of heavy songs?
Yeah, easily. And when we went to the studio, we're like, we don't care if it's heavy, we just want the 10 best songs, you know what I mean? 9 or 10 best songs. And those 10 songs ended up being, you know, the ones that weren't really that heavy. Like there's heavy moments on the record.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
but,
totally.
But yeah, there was like there was a lot of songs that were like purely that were written to be like all screaming for the most part, and you know, like very heavy songs. They just we didn't feel like they were up to par with the other ones. So
I always ask people when they talk about this, and some people will say like, "Oh, I wrote 20 songs," and some people like say like throw out ridiculous numbers, like I wrote 70 songs.
Shut the
fuck up. Yeah, like people literally tell me that, maybe, and I always call them out because I'm like, "What do you mean? Like, okay, explain."
I get like 70s? Maybe you wrote 70 riffs, but you didn't write 70 songs.
Right.
Get out of here.
That's where I'm at. So with those six or seven heavy songs that are, well, I mean, it's not that they're shit songs. They just weren't the best songs.
Right.
Is there any chance that those are going to come to, you know, be on the next record or maybe some, you know, version of them could be?
It's possible. There's definitely one I think we've agreed that we would like to use the skeleton in the future or something because it had some really cool parts. But
right.
Yeah, going forward.
But do you think you hit your ceiling of heavy music? I love that question.
Yeah, that's a good question. No. I would like to experiment like with heavy in a different way, I guess. You know what I mean? Like make it fun again. Because I guess the point where I was when we wrote Dispose, I was just not... There was nothing I could really write about that made sense with heavy music. You know what I mean? Like I was going through a breakup, had all these emotions and all that shit. So I wanted to write something that fit what I was actually going through.
Right.
And that just happened to be, you know, the flow and the kind of just the feel vibe of it. So
more sadness than anger. Perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. There it was not very angry. It was just pretty like down in the dumps and yeah, over it.
Yeah. All right. And, okay. We had another question. These are all from my sinners, by the way, members of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. I love y'all. Caitlin Stevens asks, maybe ask about where his inspiration for the bluesy type of sound from his solo album Dynamite came from. And we sort of touched on this, but I know you're working on another one, follow up to Dynamite. So,
basically I don't really even listen to blues that much, but I like the idea of it. And I like there's a couple blues songs that I like. So I was like, I've always wanted to make a blues record, like more modernized, I guess, you know, like, and do it the way that I would like to do it.
Right. I haven't heard the record. So I'm curious, do you use like 12 bar parts or is it just,
there's some, it's straight up blues rock and kind of heavy. Like, that's the best way I can describe it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like heavy blues rock, but I don't know. I just wanted to I wanted to hear that in my head, you know, like I heard what I thought it could sound like in my head and then I just kind of went for it. Sorry, that was kind of a bad answer.
No, I think it's a great answer. Yeah. And I love the idea of somebody that doesn't like whatever musical genre someone's in.
Yeah.
You have this idea in your mind that they are some kind of expert on it.
Yeah.
Like if you're in a punk band, well then you have to know who Pennywise and Bad Religion and Sex Pistols are, and you have to know all their songs. So it's like, well, not necessarily.
No, not at all. Yeah. Just go for it.
Like with anything like that. Like I know people that like are in metal bands and write great metal riffs and songs.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea what, like, they don't even know any Metallica songs.
Yeah.
You know, or they maybe heard Enter Sandman once. So it doesn't always matter.
Right.
And sometimes I feel like being, like, trying to write something from that outside perspective actually can almost be a fresher take on it.
No, absolutely. That was kind of, even with Plot, whenever I was doing Plot, I was writing way heavier stuff than, like, the stuff that I actually liked to even listen to. Because I was always like, I want to write the type of heavy music that I want to hear. You know what I mean? Like, I want to create something that, you know, I would want to listen to that I don't think really exists yet, you know? So that's always, like, my motivation in writing in general is, like, I like this, the idea of this style or this sound, but I don't like how other people have done it thus far, you know? So I want to kind of, like, give my take on, like, how I would like to hear it done, you know?
Absolutely.
That's what keeps it fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. Well, what else to tell the people? Thank you for allowing me into your home and
yeah, of course.
And everything.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Other than just taking a break from tour, just trying to finish the solo record. That's pretty much it. I think I've got like 7 or 8 songs completely done, and I think I might add like 1 or 2 more. So
are you going to go out on the road by yourself?
I'm doing a solo tour in the summer. It should be announced like within the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think. But
okay,
it's like my first like legit, like super legit solo tour this is my first solo tour where I'm not headlining too. So,
oh, okay, okay. Well, I don't want to, because this is going to come out soon, so I don't want to spoil anything. But when you do this, are you going on the road by yourself? Or are you bringing out someone else to play band?
I usually just bring a drummer and a guitar player slash like keyboard guy. Kind of does that.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Do you arrange? Do you do a lot of like samples or anything? Do you,
yeah,
do you
a lot
play,
of it's,
play some backing tracks.
Yeah,
and stuff?
A lot of there's a lot of backing tracks. Yeah, I have at least the live drums and the dude that plays guitar. Yeah. So at least there's like two elements of realness in it. But yeah,
yeah, you're not like playing a CD. And
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Although I feel like now that's like with all the emo rap stuff,
oh,
like
dude,
that's like fine.
It's fine. Yeah,
yeah, no one cares anymore.
There's videos of Post Malone singing over his CD, like legitimately like singing over his own voice.
With the vocals still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've seen that before.
That's acceptable now. That's fine.
Yeah. In fact, I saw that happen in Detroit.
Yeah.
My ex, the one I was talking about, her best friend is one of the morning people on 95.5, mm-hmm. radio station. So we used to go to all these like weirdo like radio events, I guess. So there was this one show that was contest winners, mm-hmm. and it was for contest winners. And Dino Cicerelli, the ex Red Wing player, it was like owned the bar. He was there. It was mm-hmm. super weird. And it was Flo Rida and Teo Cruz. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Teo Cruz, yeah. I put my hands up in the air sometimes. I love that. That's my jam. So he literally came out wearing sunglasses, like had a microphone, and he was like, yeah, like getting the crowd going. Mm-hmm. And it was just like pushed play.
Yeah.
Wasn't the right track. Stopped. Pushed play again on the right track.
I'd love
like
to see
literally,
that.
It was literally a compact disc. Like, I don't even think it was, I think it was literally a CD, and he was performing the record, vocals, he was just singing over top of the vocals.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even really
like,
singing.
They're like a hype man for their own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was just there. When Flo Rida played after, and he had a little bit more going on, not much more.
Yeah.
Like, at least they, like his producer or mixer was able to make him a instrumental version. So, you know what I mean? So he got to like perform vocal without the vocals there.
Dude, if pop stars from like the olden days could see that now, they'd probably be so pissed off. Like, what did we do? What did we set these people up for?
I'm pissed off. Yeah. Like, what is that? You know?
Can you imagine getting paid thousands of dollars to just go sing over yourself every night and just jump around?
It's crazy.
Sounds great. Sign me up.
It's not bad. Yeah. I saw another one too. It was Sean Kingston he was on one of those New Year's Eve shows. He was in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, they have all the different regional ones.
Yeah.
And he was great because he was clearly like lip syncing. Mm-hmm. Cause maybe because he was sometimes on those things, they like make you do that, right?
Yeah.
Like on the Super Bowl and stuff.
Yeah. You're forced to. Yeah.
You're forced to.
Yeah.
But he didn't care. Mm-hmm. He was just like dancing, singing, like just, and I like actually loved that about him. And to this day, whenever I hear about Sean Kingston, I'm like, I fucking love that guy.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's like weird, you know. It's such a little thing.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, all right, man. Well, hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
And
thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, for real. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. Actually, one more thing.
Yeah.
I'll play a song for the people. What should I play them of all your material?
Play them. I always wanted to leave. Okay. I'm trying to plug that one a little. I want to play it on the next tour, so I want it to pop off a little bit more.
That's the song about the ex while you're still with the girl. That's listen to these lyrics, everybody. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome.
Oh yeah.
So there it is with Landon. I want to thank him and his wife and his dog for having me into his home in beautiful downtown Detroit to speak with him. And he's a bit of a mysterious guy, I've found out. However, I found he was very open and honest and cool as hell to me, and I absolutely loved this conversation. Next week, I will be back with a brand new, all new episode of the show. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Make sure you check out the All Access Club. And again, feel free to hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. If you got anything at all to say, suggestions for future guests, if you got a cool company that wants to advertise on the show, whatever you need, hit me up. I am here just like I always am. I will leave you with a tune. Here is The Plot and You
from their great record Dispose. Here is I Always Wanted to Leave. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
I always wanted to leave. I'm just so sick of how you just invested in me. So now I gotta find the best way out. I always wanted to leave. Too many days that I've wasted. Say that I'm abrasive, complacent. Got you moving back and you can't fix it. Some days I wish that both my legs would cave. Fall asleep and never wake so that no words could break. Spare me all your insecurities. I got my own but I don't follow them so religiously.
Forever ago.
All right, we're back. I'll put this on after the song because of course, once the mic gets turned off, this good shit's happening. Yeah. So, sorry, what were you going to say?
So, basically, I forget how old, I must have been like 15, 16 years old. And my family was watching American Idol. And this dude came on, he performed one of your songs, and they like ripped him to shreds. Like,
oh, yeah.
They were so mean to him, like laughing in his face. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I checked you guys out. I was like, oh, this is sick. Down Bear. And,
really? Yeah. So you actually heard it, found out about the band from that?
Yeah, I was stoked about it. I liked it a lot. And so, yeah, actually, the first tour we did with you guys was the first tour. I was like, this is sick. I'm touring with a band like I listened to, you know, growing up. But, yeah.
That's crazy. Well,
stroke your ego a little bit.
No, well, that's rad. But I love that. But, yeah, I remember when that happened, we were in Europe. We were on tour with Simple Plan.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, this is primitive. Like, this is like 2006. So this is like kind of before social media was like really a big thing. But my phone like blew up.
Yeah, I
my
can like imagine.
You know, my whatever I had, my
were you stoked at the time
or something? Yeah, it was like it was crazy, and because that show, you know, people don't really remember how big it was.
Yeah,
like, it was huge. I was getting because I wrote the song "Smash Into Pieces." I was getting pretty big royalty checks just from American Idol.
That's so sick.
Just playing, like, even just playing repeats of that.
Yeah.
was so weird.
So they had to like get approval to use that song, right?
I guess so. Yeah.
Like, it didn't get run by you.
I didn't know about it until it aired. But that was you know, through Victory Records and
something.
Yeah, maybe I don't know.
That's crazy.
But yeah, it was super crazy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny how much that did. For us,
you still in contact
time.
With that guy?
Yeah, I met. Well, not. It's been a couple of years now, but he got ripped apart too. not just by Simon and whoever else, Paul Abdul, but
Randy Jackson.
Randy Jackson. He did the funny like the or whatever.
yeah, he was doing inhales.
He
for
did
sure.
the impression. Yeah. It was super funny. But he was getting ripped apart on like. On MySpace. I guess MySpace existed.
Yeah, it did.
So I hit the guy up and I was like, hey, man, like...
He came out to perform at a show, right?
Yeah, he came out. That's what happened. So I said, hey, man, like, I thought you did a really good job and that was really cool and, like, thank you. And he's like, oh, thanks, man. People are saying, like, I suck, but, like, they edited it all weird and, like...
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, man. So I'm like... So he was from Las Vegas and I said, you know what, man? When we're in town, I'd love to have you come up and sing it with us.
Yeah.
So we did.
Interesting.
And then we became like friends and I see him every now and then. It's been a couple of years now though.
That's interesting.
Shout out to Ryan Hart, wherever you are.
Oh, and I just remembered Larry told me he wanted me to tell this story. You can use this if you want or not, but he made me tell him like say that I was going to tell the story.
Larry's our Silverstein's merch guy and also Plot News merch guy.
He did photos for us on this last tour. He was drunkenly.
So that's why he was getting hammered because he didn't have to sell merch.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he kept bragging about like how stoked he was to not have any real responsibilities. But so this one day we had an off day and we're just driving, and the power went off in the bandwagon. Have you had that happen? I think we're in like Texas or something. It wasn't too bad out, but it was a little toasty.
Like while you're driving, like all the lights and everything go off.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, the
generator. I never had that.
Yeah, so we're just sitting back, like, sweating. Everyone's phone is, like, dead or dying. Everyone's switch is dead, so we're all just bored. We get this great idea to... We have this big tub of beef jerky, and I tried it, and it was disgusting, and I tried to pawn it off on them, and they're like, no. So I threw it away, and we're just staring at it, and Matisse is like, you know what we should do with that? And I instantly knew what he's talking about. It's like, yeah, we should all shit in it. So I shit in it first.
What? Yeah, that's what I thought you were. He's like, oh, I knew you were going to say that. Okay.
We love to shit outside. That's like our thing.
Okay.
And we have a new thing of like, we like to shit on each other's shit. That's just like what we do for
fun. I've done that on porta potties on Warped Tour.
Yeah, right.
That's really gnarly.
We just like to do it outside.
Okay.
So I shit in the thing first. And Matisse, our drummer, he shat in it next. And I had to hold it for him because the
bus
was
so bumpy.
Like, yeah, it was rattling around really hard.
So you're watching your friend shit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like up close.
That's
And so he shits in it too. And Larry's like hammered at like 3 p.m. And he's like, oh, I'm going to piss in it. So he pisses in the container thing. And he's like wobbling around all drunk and stuff. And he thinks that he seals it up. He like turns the thing. And so he starts like shaking it around and the lid pops off and he's just like, there's piss and shit just going everywhere. And it gets on Josh, our guitar player's foot, and he's like gagging. Everyone's laughing hysterically.
Oh my God.
The whole bus smells like a porta potty. And yeah, he had to clean it all up. It took him a while, but yeah, that was like, that was for whatever reason he wanted me to tell that story.
Oh my God. There's other things there that
And our water pump went off too. So I don't know if you've had that happen, but like the last week we couldn't shower.
It smelled
like piss everywhere.
Oh no, we've had the water pump like break, but we've never had a problem where it did that. Like I think we got it fixed in a couple days or whatever.
Smelled like hot piss for the whole last
So
week.
You guys are really into shitting on stuff and you don't have any issue with your friend shitting. Oh, you're a dick band.
Yeah, we're
I call it a dick band. Yeah.
Huge. Well, now we're an asshole band too now. We like to just see where we're at, you know. We
show each other.
We used to play this game called Inspection where you'd call out Inspection.
Oh my,
it's like tag, but if you're the inspector, you can call Inspection and everyone has to bend over and spread their asshole and you kind of rate. You know, and the worst, whoever has the worst, they become the new inspector. We used to have a flashlight, too, that the inspector would carry at all times.
This is
wild. We're an asshole band. Yeah.
This is what homeschooling does to people.
Yeah, it'll fuck you
up. You missed out on
this childhood,
so now you're really taking it to the next level,
exactly.
Overcompensating.
Yep,
exactly. Wow. Yeah. That's something, man. Well,
so that's where
we're at. What a way to end the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this as like a little secret track.
Yeah.
So like you'll have to wait. Like, you know how CDs used to do that? Like,
yeah.
It'd be
it's
like
a Marvel movie.
And then,
that's like the end post-credit scene.
Exactly. So that's what this is.
Okay,
so
cool.
Maybe some people won't hear this.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
I hope not.
Man, thank you so much, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You know
it.
What? Let's play another song. What the hell?
Let's do The Sound off the record.
Here it is.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
There was a time when I brought light to your eyes. Even the worst of days could not keep us apart. Afraid to spill those evil thoughts, even the ones that made you question who you are. You feel it, eyes racing, my feet were buried in the ground, my chains break, I can't take. I don't feel like I still have anything to hold me here. My steps fade, she can't take the sound. The good days fade, the bad ones take and break the spirit.